last time I didn't really like it, so we're going to try it again. Elementary level digital age kids. And I can see that you all have some serious concerns about whether or not we should integrate technology at younger grades. And I hope that what you'll see throughout this course is that there are definitely some benefits to doing it. And also what you'll learn from today's lecture is that it's not just beneficial for their learning, but it's also inherent within who children are. This cartoon I love because it shows that children starting even before they're born are being exposed to technology. And I don't know how many of you have had kids in the last 5 or 10 years, but you'll know that the way that people have kids now is they want to know everything that they can to maximize the intelligence of their children. So, you know, you're doing the Mozart to your belly when the baby's still in the belly. When the baby comes out, you're putting different lights or different color patterns around them because that'll increase their brain. Pretty much that's the big thing now is when you have children, you want to give them as much stimulation as you can that's going to reinforce their ability to be more intellectually capable in the future. And a lot of people are doing that. Not everyone, but a lot. And this graphic shows that, let's get them on that computer right away. And I'll tell you that I had my kids on computers when they were infants. What would happen is I'd be working on my dissertation, and I'd have a little boy on my lap, and he was getting a little noisy, so what I might do is put on the computer something like a living book, like maybe Grandma and Me, and they'd watch that little living book. And so we'd just start by watching it. And then, you know, as he gets to 2, he can start playing with the mouse and clicking on things. Whether that's right or not, we don't know. And that is a philosophical debate that's going on right now in educational technology. Some people say don't put them on early. Other people say put them on early. So what would motivate us to put our kids on early? And the reason that I was motivated to do it, and other people I think are too, is that we live in a digital world. Technology is part of our natural landscape. It used to be that if you wanted to call somebody on the telephone, you had to go to the payphone, or you had to go and find a place to find a telephone. Now, everybody has a telephone. You know, if you're in a car accident, everybody has their phones right there. It's not a big deal. Technology is everywhere. It permeates what we do. Also, we live in an environment that not just has the technology, but we think differently than we used to. We used to kind of think in bullet points. This is what comes first, second, and third. Now we think in a non-linear way, not like in a line, but we're jumping all over the place. Maybe I'm going to go this way, maybe I'm going to go this way, but I can go back this way if I want later. I can change directions. And a lot of that has to do with the idea that using computers, we've learned that we don't have to read a book from one page from the beginning to the end. We can go any direction we want. And you remember, I don't know if you guys weren't alive in the 70s, but in the 70s we used to have these books where it would say, if you think this is going to happen, go to page 65, and if you think this is going to happen, go to page 68. Well, you don't have to do that anymore. You can go online and you're constantly given that choice of, do you want to go to page 65 or 68? Also, we live in an environment where we are very empowered with a lot of individual control. If I want to buy a book, I can go to Borders or Barnes & Noble, and I can just browse the books, I can smell the coffee in the background, I can sit down in a big comfy chair, or I can stay home in my PJs and order it on Amazon.com and get it 24 or 48 hours later. So I have control of how I'm going to get a product in this service age. We also live in an environment, according to people like Thomas Nonke and Thomas Friedman, or William Nonke and Thomas Friedman, that is multinational, multicultural, and multidisciplinary. So everything is starting to converge. There is so much information in our world. There is so much accessibility in our world. Everything is all coming together. It's not where we live in our little world and our little community anymore. If you just look at your shoes, you know that we can't live without China and Taiwan and Korea to supply some of the materials that we use in our everyday life, or the computers. You know, if we look at different places around the world, they supply us and we supply them. We are interconnected now in a way that our world was not interconnected when some of us were much younger. And one of the ways that we're interconnected is through the internet. In 2005, it was postulated that there would be 1 billion users of the internet. That's significant. So what does this mean for children in today's world? Well, one of the terms given to children, and I like this term, is millennials. Other names are the net generation or engeners, and these are the person who defined the Engineers is Dan Tapscott, and he said that these are the children between ages 6 and 26. So actually, that's not children anymore. That's many of you in this room. So you fall into that category. But I'm going to say it goes all the way down. That everyone that's probably below age 25 or 26 now, you grew up with technology everywhere. It was just part of your life. Those of us who are older than that, we remember times when cell phones were big bricks, and we remember when those big bricks, hardly anybody had them, and if you had it, it was something really cool. It was amazing. It was like some space technology that you had in your pocket, but you couldn't have it in your pocket because it was so big. He argues that it's a population of 80 million, so we're talking a huge group of people, and these are the first generation of people to be growing up within an environment that is completely surrounded by technology. So when many of us were young, technology was there. But for children today, it's everywhere. When my 6 and 8-year-old want to watch TV, they use TiVo. They don't know much about live TV. And they get frustrated because sometimes they want to watch live TV because on live TV you can see things that mommy and daddy haven't put in the kids zone. So they can watch other shows that we don't allow them to watch. So they know that there's something out there, but they just aren't allowed to get to it yet. I remember when Ryan, my elder one, was probably about 4 or 5 years old. We'd go to somebody's house and he'd say, well, can't we watch this? And they said, no, it's not on. And he didn't understand that there were shows that weren't on right now because he lives in a place where time shifting of television is a natural environment. TiVo is part of his life. Cell phones are part of his life. I remember you probably watched Desperate Housewives. On one of the very first episodes, she said, you know, I've got Santa on speed dial, and I'll call him if you don't change your behavior. That's part of children, who we are. They know that the technology is there and we can get access to it. When Spencer wants to do his research on the Arctic Fox, the first place we're going to go is the internet. It used to be for us, the first place you'd want to go is the library, and you'd want to go to the encyclopedia. Now, if I want the encyclopedia, we don't own one at our house, we go to the Wikipedia. It's arguably much better, and it's definitely much more comprehensive. Children are more comfortable, knowledgeable, and literate about technology than their parents. And so I think our family is probably an anomaly. My husband used to be a software engineer, and I'm, of course, a techie geek. So our household is a little different. But what'll usually happen is if the computer breaks down, the first thing that mom or dad are going to do is call Johnny over and say, what's wrong with it? And we have to accept as adults that children are very intelligent in using these things. What it mentioned in the article that you just read is children actually have a different brain chemistry or a different brain connection that allows them to think in a digital world in a way that some of us can't because we didn't grow up with that. As a result of that, they watch less TV than their parents did when they were the same age. It doesn't mean that they're not doing less passive stuff. Well, maybe it does, but it means that they're spending time on the internet instead. So if we look at this from 1995 to 2000, we see that the general population has not changed their television viewing very much. It's pretty much a straight line. You can see the population ages 2 to 17, that's pretty consistent, maybe slightly down, probably not significant at all. Between 1995 and 2000, children between the ages of 2 and 17 who had internet access, look at how much TV viewing time they decreased. They went from about probably 17 hours to about 15 or 14 hours a week. So what were they doing in the meantime? They were spending their time on the computer. Now, again, the computer can be a very passive device where you're just going through and looking things, but you're often reading, which is a great thing for children. Also, you're making a lot of decisions. Do I want to go this way or this way? I'm starting to internalize the idea that my world is non-linear, that I can go whichever direction I want. I don't have to go from one place to the next automatically. The characteristics then of children today are that they're interactive. They don't want to sit there and be told something. They want to actually be a part of it. They want to give and take and become immersed in whatever they're doing, but not be passive regardless. They want to be mobile. They want to be able to move around. They don't want to have to sit there to do the project right there. They want to feel that they can take their handheld and go out to the field and collect data in the field for their science class. They're expressive. they want to be able to say what they think. They can go into a blog or to a game space and they can say whatever they want, and they're empowered in those environments. Yet often in school what we do is we shut them up and we tell them that you can't say necessarily what you think, or you need to be quiet and you need to listen. And so we need to give them that opportunity in school to be expressive, but be expressive in appropriate ways that are actually benefiting the content that we're trying to teach them. They're also creative communicators. When we want to communicate something, we usually do it by verbalizing it, or we'll write it up and hand it to somebody. Not kids today. They might choose to call somebody on the telephone, they might choose to text message them, they might choose to keep their own blog space, they might video conference, they might do it in a gaming environment. They'll communicate with people lots and lots of different ways. And so we need to be ready for that. When they come into our class and say, well, don't you have a blog for that? Then we have to be able to say, yeah, I know how to create a blog and I'll set that up for you, or already have it in place for them to be able to use. They're also interested in self-development. We just had Christmas, so a lot of kids in schools just got new toys for Christmas. So let's say they got a new game like Civilization or Age of Empires or War of Worldcraft. We say the kids today aren't interested in learning, but that is simply false. The truth is that the kids that got those new games that really wanted them over the holiday, they spent those 2 weeks after Christmas before school started doing everything that they could to master that, to get to the next level, to become a 38, to become a 39. You're smiling because you know. You want to get to that next level. How many of you in here are gamers? Okay. To be a gamer, what do you have to do to get to the next level? You what? Okay, you've got to play all night, so you've got to spend time with it. But what else do you have to do? You've got to learn the game, so you've got to master the skills of the game, and you have to learn this new domain in which you're surviving. And how do you learn that game? You learn it by playing and reading the instructions, maybe going out online, finding out eggs that might exist, Easter eggs and stuff like that. Okay, so there are lots of different ways that you're going to learn this. Do you spend a lot of time reading to find out, or talking to people through chatting, those of you who are gamers, to find out how to get to this next place or do that next thing? The amount of communication that happens in these gaming environments is phenomenal, and this is what your kids are doing. They're engaging in these activities. Now, you're not going to have your kindergartners and first graders. Usually, they're doing multiplayer games like this, online role-playing games, but you are going to have your third, fourth, fifth, and sixth graders are going to be doing this. And this is their environment. This is their reality. And they know a lot more about the Age of Empires and about civilizations and ancient history than you do, because they just dealt with Hannibal in their game 2 weeks ago. Okay, so they understand this stuff, but they understand it from a different context. And they're willing to put in 30 hours a week to learn about ancient history if it's going to help them get to the next level in their game. So they definitely are interested in self-development, just not necessarily the way that we want them to be interested in terms of our content. So our goal then is to figure out how can we make that a reality. They also can rapidly take in sights and sounds. How many of you just watched the Super Bowl because of the commercials? Yeah, okay, yeah, I don't even know who's playing, but if it's on, I want to be there at halftime to see the commercials. What we find is that it used to be the MTV generation would be people who would get fast sights and sounds. And I think I've done pretty well to keep up with it. But even so, now when I watch some TVs or some programs, there's so many images flashing so quickly, it's hard for me to take all that information in, to process that information. Children today aren't that way. They're used to hearing sound bits. Within 3 seconds, they know whether or not they want to watch that commercial that's between the Super Bowl or not. And if not, they're going to time shift. They're going to fast forward using their TiVo, or they're just going to skip it altogether and not even see it. So that getting information in quick bits is really important to them. They want to be able to get it in quickly, and they can process it much more quickly than the older generation like me. Okay, so what Tapscott says, he's who I referred to earlier, is engenders love hard work because working, learning, and playing are the same thing to them. So my question to you as a future educator is, how can you make your classroom working, learning, and playing all be the same thing? So what does it mean for schools? It means maybe you need to give them schooling anytime. Maybe you don't need to say it needs to happen at this time. You give them an opportunity to time shift. Maybe it doesn't happen to have to happen right here. Maybe they can go and sit someplace else or go someplace else, or we can go on field trips, get out of here, or you can do it independently at home or at the park. You can go at any pace. Maybe you need to have more control over when things happen. One quote that I just love, and this addresses one of the questions you had earlier. This is from the Distance Learning Resource Network in 2000. It says, technology won't replace teachers, but teachers using technology will replace those who don't. And so the question is, are you going to be one of those who uses it? Because there's not going to be a lot of principals out there who want somebody who doesn't know how to use technology in the future. Now, whether you use it or not is up to you. But if you don't have the skills to use it, then you're really at a disadvantage. I keep this quote by Schenck because I don't agree with it. I'm kind of frightened, actually, of what it says. He says, schools will become social centers for non-academic activities. Is that what we're going to let schools become because we're not willing to step up and use the technology effectively? We can make the technology. Technology can teach kids. We can put it in front of kids and they can learn that way. But I believe, and I hope you believe, that the teacher is what really creates the meaningful learning. And so for us to be able to be future educators, to still have our jobs in the future, we need to recognize that we don't want schools that are just social centers. We want schools to be places of learning, and we're going to use the technology to create a place of learning. We're not going to let the technologies replace us. I'm going to skip this part. Okay, so in your classrooms, you need to be creative. You need to give them opportunity to do inquiry, to ask questions, and to seek out the answers to those questions. You need to let them collaborate with each other. That's what it was talking about in the Digital Kids article. You need to let them design new things and create new things, and you need to give them real-world problem solving. They don't want to do that problem in the back of the book that has, you know, when the plane was going this way and the plane was going this way. No. If they're in eighth grade, they want to know if the terrorist plane was going this way. Okay, so you get the idea. They want it to be something that is real life, something that's meaningful to them. All right, so I love this. I just want to end the digital kids part with this. This is from Reader's Digest. And Reader's Digest, it's a popular magazine. And I think it kind of gives the pulse of the nation, what is going on in our world at the time. If you go back, this is where you used to see like Saturday Evening Post type stuff. So here we have middle school kids, it looks like, who are in band, and they're sending little love messages via IM to each other. This is the reality of today. So what's it going to look like in 5 years or in 4 years when you are all in the classroom? Okay, any questions about digital kids? Okay. All right. The next few minutes, what I'm going to do is I'm going to teach you a new program. It's called Inspiration. And the reason I'm going to teach it to you after the fact that we just talked about digital kids is we talked about how kids are nonlinear. We talked about they're hypercommunicators. And so one way that we can take advantage of that is by using tools that allow students to think outside of that linear box that we often grew up in. And one way to do that is by using concept mapping software, and Inspiration is an example of that. And if you're in Clark County School District as a teacher, you will have a site license to Inspiration. It's a visual method of describing a concept, and it is map-like in structure. It can be unidirectional, meaning it goes in a straight line, or it can be multidirectional. It can go any which way, or it usually is a leveled directional, and you'll see that in a moment. And what's important about it is it shows the relationships between things. So here is one example. This is maybe a seventh grade, eighth grade class. It says the war on the roses, and they did a KWL. What do I know? What do I want to know? What have I learned? And the what do I want to know, they want to know why are they called that, what was the purpose of the wars, how did they start, all the things that they want to know. So here's an example of one concept map that you could use in a classroom with students. Here's another one, factors of immigration, probably like a third or fourth grade. They're talking, defining push factors and pull factors, and they put the little definition up here. And then they've started to brainstorm, what are the things that push people away from a community? What are the things that pull people toward a community? And then they put their name and information down here. So this is a concept map. Yes. Making up things because you had to do four. And what do you think, based on what you've read about digital kids? Would that be a wise way to instruct? No. You might say, you know, come up with as many as you can, but I want to see at least a few. And then if a kid doesn't have more than one, you might go over and talk to them about it. And maybe it's because the one that they have is very broad and you can teach them how to break it down. Or maybe it's because they're perseverating on that one thought and they are so excited about it that you really want them to get to that first, which will lead to additional questions. So it really comes down to that service-based learning, being recognizing them as individuals and trying to get in and say, you know, let's be creative. Let's start where you are. It's more constructivist approach to teaching and learning than what we grew up with. It's not a worksheet type world that I'm trying to see you teach in the future. Okay, I'm going to send around a sample so you can look at it. My son in first grade, Spencer, just had his first project that he had to do. And they were studying the Arctic and the Antarctic, and they could choose any animal that they wanted to from the Arctic or the Antarctic. And Spencer chose the Arctic fox. So we found pictures online, and he chose which pictures he wanted, and then we used a DynaZeik, it's a paper folding method, to create this little project. But the reason I'm showing it to you today, I typed up most of this, but he typed up a lot. He did all the pasting and most of the cutting, and he helped me decide what he wanted to do. But the way that we collected his data was using inspiration. And we came up with the name, Arctic Fox, that's what he wanted. And then I started by telling him what were the main ideas that we needed to address. What does an Arctic fox look like? Tell us about its babies. Tell us what it eats. Tell us where they live. As we were going through and he was watching videos on it or I was reading to him, he'd say, stop, Mommy, and write that down. So I would write down, and I did it on paper originally because we did it over several days, and you know, sometimes he was sitting in bed, and sometimes we were on the computer. So as he'd stop me, and then I'd write down whatever he would say. So we got to this information about tails, and that the Arctic fox wraps its tail around its head to keep its head warm in sub-zero temperatures. And he wanted to write that down. And so I said, well, what bubble does it go under? And I read them to him because his reading isn't great yet. And he said, it should go under tails. But there was no tails. So his idea was we should create a new bubble for tails, and then we added these new things. And then as we were going through, he would say, that one should go under tails too. So a first grader is certainly capable of all this. They aren't going to be able to do all this writing. Now to do the assignment, I started the bubbles, and Spencer wrote Arctic Fox. He wrote his name, which is over here. And he wrote all of the, he typed up babies, eats, looks like, tails, things they like to do, and where they live, because that's a lot of typing for a first grader. The rest of the typing I did, but these were all his ideas that were put down. So don't think that a first grader can't do incredible stuff, because this is what they can do. My kid's average, so. Okay, let's think of digital kids. What I've got is just a concept in the middle, digital kids, and let's break this into a couple of different sections when we think about the article. I'm going to put down, if I click right here, I can just type something in. So I'm going to type in digital children, and right here I'm going to type in digital schools, and over here I'm going to click and type in digital world. Now I can connect these things if I'd like. I click on the main idea where I want to link from, and if I click on this little diamond right here, I can drag down to wherever I want it to go. So I've created a little connection. Now let's think about digital children. We've been talking about what characterizes a child of the digital age. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to click on this little thing called Rapid Fire, and it's going to allow me to type in a lot of things separated by returns. So just yell out, what are some of the aspects of digital children?
Multitasking.
Okay, they're multitasking. What else? Quickly. Okay, varied communication styles. Okay, what else?
Goal-oriented.
One more, maybe. What's say in the article? Something else about digital kids, anything that we just talked about or in the article? Okay, familiar with technology. Let me add in another one. Let's say they're hyper-communicators. Or we did hyper-communicators. Let's do they're non-linear. Okay, and why? Oh, I lost my rapid-fire thing. Hang on a second. Next. Rapid-fire. And... okay, all right, so I've got all this in, and you don't need to be doing this now. Now, it's a bit of a mess, so what I can do is I can click up here on Arrange, and it will organize all of that information. I can change the way I want it arranged if I want. I tend to like balance, so I click OK. And then down here in the upper left-hand corner, I can say Fit to Window or change whatever size I want. So I've created a little concept map. I can now, if I want to click on Outline, I can see it in outline form, and I can even add in new things about schools if I want. So what are some things about digital schools? They should have be inquiry-based. Oops. Okay, give me two more, quickly. What about schools? What did we just talk about?
Decided by the principal.
Okay.
What kind of students?
That's probably, though, not something we'd want a characteristic of digital schools.
Creativity.
Okay, creative, okay. And one more. Okay, real world problem solving. Good, okay. Now if I go back to my diagram again, you can see that it put it in this kind of freaky way again. I can make it fit into the window, and now I can arrange it, and it looked nice again. Another thing that I can do is I can go in and I can add in different pictures if I want. So digital children, if I click here, I can click on this side, find people, and find a little child, okay? And I can click here for digital schools, and I can go into work in school, let's go school, and do this one, or this one, okay? And I can go over here, digital world, and let me do the science, and space, and give me an earth, okay? Okay, so now I've created a little, real quickly, a little concept map, and that's where we're going to start next session. Okay, so what we did today, we learned how to use a KWL. We talked about digital kids and digital tools. We did some group work. I lectured and I demonstrated inspiration for you. You should feel confident using a KWL strategy. We'll use that at the beginning of next session. You should know what the steps in the writing process are and why we're doing this writing process with your technology journey. You should be able to describe millennials with your notes, and you should know basic information on how to use concept mapping software. Your reading quiz before we meet next time is the NESS information. You do need to sign in to that tutorial, just putting your name to get in. Your technology journey edits are due by Wednesday at 8 a.m. And make sure that you back up all of your documents. And if you need any help with using any of the technology, go online to the online demonstrations. I'll see you on Wednesday. Thank you. Okay. Okay. You know what? Why don't you just give it to me and I'll do it here on my machine. Oh, I thought I went to attach because I tried it.